Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Freemasonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. I'm your host, Brother Robert Johnson. Well, many thanks to all the new likes on Facebook and followers on Twitter. Some things you might want to check out in the world of Masonic news is France finally expelled one of their Grand Masters. I'm not going to go into it, but it is interesting and you guys might want to look into it. I was officially received and officially obligated into the Allied Masonic Degrees, or the AMD, and I had to present a paper. And the paper I presented was a much beefier version of a paper that I presented in the first year of this podcast, which dealt with the Word. And I'd love to share it, but I think it might be too much for some fellows and the profane. Once published, I'll let everybody know, and then if you want to read it, I'll forward you a copy after making sure you're a Master Mason. I have to say, my wife and I got together right out of high school, got married in 2002, and moved to California. We came back to Illinois in 2007 when we had our first son. Now, two more baby boys later, and a whole lot of life. I'm saying happy anniversary to my wife of 11 years. And to that, as a Freemason, I know many of you have wives and girlfriends who not only support us, but encourage us as Masons and understand everything we do, and they share us. So right now, I just want to say thanks to my lady and to all of your ladies for the understanding, patience, and all the help that they do for us and the fraternity. Cheers to all the Masons ladies. A quick note. James E. Fry will get us the third part of his Masonic paper on the Lost Word as soon as he's done with his finals. So we'll wish James Fry good luck on your finals, and we'll be anxiously awaiting your third part. This week I have two pieces. The first is from the Knight Templar magazine, and the second is from the Northern Lights Scottish Rite Northern Masonic Jurisdiction magazine. Let's jump right in. And this is from the Knight Templar magazine, May 2013, number 5. And I will have the whole issue as the PDF document for this week's bonus feature on the Apple and Android app. The Symbol of the Skull and Crossbones and Its Masonic Application by Sir Knight P.D. Newman. There has been a great deal of controversy of late concerning the symbol of the skull and crossbones and whether or not it should be regarded as a legitimate Masonic emblem. This article is an attempt to demonstrate that this symbol is indeed authentic in its Masonic association, for it both conceals and reveals genuine mysteries pertaining to our craft. Considering the fact that the skull and crossbones continue to be common addition to chambers of reflection and third-degree tracing boards of many Masonic jurisdictions, as well as prominent feature within the Templar and Kadosh Grees of the York and Scottish Rites, it would seem to me that the symbol's legitimacy is, if the reader will allow the parlance, a given. But unfortunately for many Masons, a connection between the seemingly macabre emblem of the skull and crossbones and our gentle craft is one which remains obscured by what in all probability are simply and understandably the shadows of their own ill-founded fears and insecurities. The association of the symbol of the skull and crossbones with notions of piracy and poison has no doubt left many Masons desirous of distancing themselves and indeed the fraternity from these and similar emblems. Memento mori. It is natural to fear death, but we as Masons are taught to view that inescapable moment not as something to dread, but rather as a motivating factor in accomplishing our own work and duty as men and Masons. Quote, the particles of the hourglass run rapidly, for aught we know, with the passing of one of them, you or I shall die. It is uncertain. We should not neglect a moment, but do all we can do to the great end of being really happy. For we shall die, and in the grave there is no working, there is no device, no knowledge, no pardon there. End quote. For this reason, we are given a sobering reminder every time we have the fortune to sit in a lodge during the raising of a fellow of the craft to the sublime degree of a Master Mason, or during the knighting of a Mason as a Templar or a Knight Kadosh, that death is always near, and that it could come at any place and at any time, regardless of the person or persons involved. Be it in the chamber of reflection and the jurisdictions where one is permitted or required, the tracing board of the Master Mason's degree, the knighting ceremony of the Order of the Temple in the York Rite, or the Knight's Kadosh degree in the Scottish Rite. that which stands as the primary reminder of the grim truth that death is ever imminent, is the chilling human skull and crossbones. However, the symbol also has an esoteric application which is equally, if not more, profound in its relevance. We shall begin our exploration by first focusing on the Masonic significance of the death's head or human skull. In his book, Law Magic, Brother Lon Milo Duquette half-jokingly stated regarding the mechanism of the ritual work and ceremonial magic that it's all in your head, you just have no idea how big your head is. According to one 18th century Masonic expose, Brother Duquette is absolutely right. In Samuel Pritchard's Masonry Dissected, we encounter the following dialogue. Quote, question, have you any key to the secrets contained in the lodge? Answer, yes. Question, where do you keep it? Answer, in a bone box that neither opens nor shuts, but with ivory keys. Question, does it hang or does it lie? Answer, it hangs. Question, what does it hang by? Answer, a tow line 9 inches or a span. Question, what metal is it of? Answer, no manner of metal at all, but a tongue of good report is as good behind a brother's back as before his face. End quote. The key is the tongue, the bone box, the teeth, the tow line, the roof of the mouth. A similar exchange appearing in the Sloane manuscript led historian Tobias Churchton to declare outright that indeed the lodge is in the head. This suggests that the lodge furniture, ornaments, and officers may all have their reflection within the makeup of a man. Sufi-inspired Russian mystic G.I. Gurdjieff offered a similar teaching. According to a Gurdjieff, every man not unlike a perfect lodge has an internal sevenfold constitution which he termed the seven men. This notion is not unlike the theosophical teaching concerning the septenary nature of the soul of man, an interpretation which has since the occult revival of the 19th century consistently been executed by authors such as Manly P. Hall, J.S.M. Ward, and W.L. Wilmhurst to the seven officers which constitute a perfect lodge. Quote, man, the sevenfold being, is the most cherished of all the creator works, and hence also it is that the lodge has seven principal officers, and that a lodge to be perfect requires the presence of seven brethren. Though the deeper meaning of the phrase is that the individual man, in virtue of his sevenfold constitution, in himself constitutes the perfect lodge, if he will but know himself and analyze his own nature aright. End quote. More recently, in his formidable book, Freemasonry Symbol Secret Significance by W. Kirk McNulty, he applied a decidedly Jungian solution to the problem of Masonic ritual, placing the lodge, candidate, and officers squarely and neatly within the conscious and unconscious mind, that is, inside the head. The crossbones also have an intriguing Masonic application. In the guidelines provided by the Grand Lodge of Colorado for implementing and conducting a proper chamber of reflection, Masons are informed that, quote, the crossbones are also a hint at the pillars, the portico of man upon which he must stand as he labors in the quarry, end quote. As Matthew C. Pelham Sr. demonstrated in his thought-provoking article, A Search for More Light in the Symbolism of the Skull and Crossbones, the association between the crossbones, which themselves are always constructed using human femurs or thigh bones, and the two pillars of the temple stems no doubt from the verse in Song of Solomon, which announces in a moving hymn to deity that his legs are as pillars. Still, there is another similarity between the pillars of Masonic Lodge and someone's, or more specifically, something's legs, which is so absolutely striking that I dare not fail to mention it. In the Greek myth of Jason and the Argonauts, the ship Argo sailed to Europa in Crete following Jason's legendary retrieval of the Golden Fleece. On the island of Europa, the Argonauts encountered a great metallic giant called Talos, meaning sun or solar, which was cast wholly or solid bronze. His legs, on the other hand, were also made of bronze, were cast completely hollow, and one of them, it was said, contained a single vein through which flowed the divine ichor, or golden blood of the gods. The presence of the ichor within his leg animated the giant, enabling Talos to perform the sole function for which he was created, that is, to circumscribe Europa 3 times daily in order to protect and guard the land from approaching pirates. If the reader will recall, the pillars of Freemasonry are also said not only to have been hollow and cast from bronze, but according to some traditions within the craft, it was only one of them which contained the treasured archives of Freemasonry. not unlike Talos' peculiar legs, only one of which was possessive of the Olympic god's magical ichor. Lastly, it is notable that scholar A.B. Cook interpreted the myth of Talos as being veiled in allusion to the Masonically relevant lost wax casting method of metallurgy, thus bringing us back full circle to the question of the legitimacy of this symbol. Regardless of the negative connotations which may surround the image, the symbol of the skull and crossbones, whether considered exoterically or esoterically, is absolutely possessive of the profound Masonic import. As we have demonstrated, the image is suggestive of both man's mortality and, more significantly, initiation within the Masonic Lodge. We are hopeful that we've aided our more uncertain brethren in laying aside some of their underlying fears and insecurities concerning this most curious and potent of Masonic emblems. The symbol of the skull and crossbones points at once to the inevitable end of man, as well as to one of the means by which he might accept and come to peace with the knowledge and anticipation of such an ending, tried and true Masonic initiation. Alright, that's very interesting stuff. Next is a letter from the Sovereign Grand Commander of the Ancient Accepted Scottish Rite of the Northern Masonic Jurisdiction. And I'll be reading this out of the Northern Light Magazine, Volume 44, Number 2, May of 2013. So this is, again, by the Sovereign Grand Commander, John W. M. McNaughton, 33rd Degree. And the article is titled, Ford Motor Company. I just thought it was a really good story that led to an example he was trying to portray. Anyway, so here's the article. Ford Motor Company. When CEO Alan Mulally was named president and chief executive officer of the Ford Motor Company in 2006, Ford was struggling under the weight of huge losses and a steeply declining market share. To revitalize the company, Mulally instituted several initiatives. He mortgaged all of Ford's assets for a $23.6 billion loan, brought back the Taurus nameplate, suspended dividends to the shareholders, and sold the Jaguar and Land Rover brands. Notably, the mortgage was initially viewed by the industry as a sign of desperation, but when the U.S. economic crisis took hold in 2008-2009, Ford, in contrast to fellow Detroit manufacturers Chrysler and GM, did not seek a government bailout. Since then, Ford has not only returned to profitability, but in January of 2013, the Ford Focus toppled the Toyota Camry as the best-selling car in the world. Shortly after taking office, Mulally noted the poor reviews that Ford had been receiving from Consumer Reports. To learn why, he decided to take Ford's heads of engineering and product planning to visit Consumer Reports' test facility in Connecticut. When Consumer Reports gave negative appraisals on the then new Ford Edge, the Ford staff tried to argue their rationalizations for the negative assessments. Mulally admonished his executives by reminding them that they were there to listen and learn so that they might understand before they could be understood. Ultimately, Mulally and his team were able to face what the facts were telling them. Ford had let itself go. Worse than that, a culture had developed within Ford whereby executives would not openly admit the flaws in their own projects. Are there similarities between the state in which Ford found itself and the current state of the Masonic fraternity? Like Ford, have we let ourselves go? The tendency of Masonic leadership to routinely ignore what members are trying to tell them seems to have a direct parallel with the failure of Ford executives who were not listening to their customers. If we take time to listen to both what is and isn't being said, perhaps we could better understand how to provide inspirational and enjoyable experiences for our existing members. We may then be able to attract more of those good men who have historically sought admission into Freemasonry. Maybe if we started acting like Masons instead of just sounding like Masons, we would evolve beyond being a culture focused only on those who seek the laurels of a vanishing institution. Much like the employees at Consumer Reports explaining customer preferences to Ford management, our members are trying to tell our leaders that changes need to be made. Unfortunately, few leaders seem to be listening. There is nothing so constant in our universe as change, yet mankind seems to fear and fight change at every turn. This is something that our brother, illustrious Henry Ford, 33rd degree, member of the Valley of Detroit and founder of the Ford Motor Company, knew all too well. Quote, businessmen go down with their businesses because they like the old way so well they cannot bring themselves to change. One sees them all about, men who do not know that yesterday is past and who woke up this morning with their last year's ideas. End quote. The 1908 Model T bears no resemblance to the 2013 Ford Focus. Design and technology have evolved. Things have changed. Perhaps if we, too, could change our focus, Freemasonry would once again return to its rightful place as the greatest fraternity ever known to man. It would not be as difficult as one might imagine. Ford listened and put its customers first. Will Freemasonry listen and put its members first? Signed, John McNaughton, Sovereign Grand Commander. All right, now I still think Freemasonry is and will always be the greatest fraternity in existence, and I'm sure all of you do as well. But an interesting parallel that he draws there. Now, really quickly, I wanted to mention a link that you might see on Facebook or on our website, and it's for a new movie that's coming out, which deals with some hugely controversial things. I thought it looked great, and so I posted it there as an ad on the right side, about halfway down. And feel free to watch the trailer and let me know what you think. Basically, a medical doctor becomes involved with some very controversial and deep conspiracy stuff. It's really neat, actually. It's a documentary, and they cover things from free energy or zero-point energy to aliens to UFOs and big oil problems. It's pretty wide spectrum. Anyway, check it out if you have a minute, and it's called Sirius, like the star. Next is this week's famous Freemason, James Hoban, born 1758 and passed away on December 8, 1831. He was an Irish architect, and he was best known for designing the White House in Washington, D.C. He was raised on an estate belonging to Earl of Desart in Ireland, and he worked there as a wheelwright and carpenter until his early 20s, when he was given an advanced student place in the Dublin Society's drawing school on the lower Grafton Street. He excelled in his studies and received the prestigious Duke of Leinster's medal for drawings of brackets, stairs, and roofs from the Dublin Society in 1780. Later, Hoban found a position as an apprentice to the headmaster of the Dublin Society School, the Cork-born architect Thomas Ivory. Following the American Revolutionary War, Hoban immigrated to the United States and established himself as an architect in Philadelphia in 1785. Hoban's amended elevation of the White House, late 1793 or early 1794. Hoban was in South Carolina by April 1787, where he designed numerous buildings, including the Charleston County Courthouse, built on the ruins of the former South Carolina State House. President Washington admired Hoban's work, and on his southern tour may have met with him in Charleston in May of 1791 and summoned the architect to Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, the temporary national capital, in June of 1792. In July 1792, Hoban was named winner of the design competition for the White House. His initial design seemed to have had a three-story facade and nine bays across. Under Washington's influence, Hoban amended this to a two-story facade, 11 bays across, and at Washington's insistence, the whole presidential mansion was faced with stone. It is unclear whether any of Hoban's surviving drawings are actually from this competition. Hoban was also one of the supervising architects who served on the Capitol, carrying out the design of Dr. William Thornton. Hoban lived the rest of his life in Washington, D.C., where he worked on other public buildings and government projects, including roads and bridges. He also designed Rosanara House near the village of Kilmogony in Kilkenny, Ireland, in 1824. Hoban's wife, Susanna Sewall, was the daughter of a prominent Georgetown City Tavern proprietor. Hoban was also involved in the development of Catholic institutions in the city, including Georgetown University, where his son was a member of the Jesuit community, St. Patrick's Parish, and the Visitation Convent founded by another Kilkenny native, Teresa Lalor of Ballyrigaid. Hoban died in Washington, D.C. on December 8, 1831, and he is buried at historic Mount Olivet Cemetery in Washington, D.C. He was the first master of Federal Lodge No. 1, District of Columbia. That's it for this week. Please share our page with your friends and brothers on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at WhenceCameU. Feel free to follow any other way you like, be that Tumblr, WordPress, Google+, Pinterest, or just the website wcypodcast.com. Don't forget about the Midnight Freemasons blog featuring original material 3 times a week, Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. If you are looking for another Masonic podcast, there are a few. One that I'm involved in, a small part, is Brother Juan Sepulveda's Winding Stairs podcast. I deliver a Masonic conspiracy on his show. And another great podcast is the Far From Centered podcast, which is hosted by Brother Robert Patrick Lewis. I will do a weekly Famous Freemason on his show as well. And links to both of these are on our website, wcypodcast.com, under Podcast Partners. I want to give everyone a push to go check out another blog, which is great, and it's from the original Midnight Freemason brother, Todd E. Creason, who regularly posts on his blog called From Labor to Refreshment. Again, links to that on our website as well. And if it turns out that you do enjoy his writing, obviously, you can go after his books, Famous American Freemasons, Volume 1 and 2. I think there's a combined version now, which is what I own. Also, he has a couple novels that are already out, and another one is coming out. And as I said before, if you do like his writing on the blog, an easy way to follow that is to go ahead and give a like to the Midnight Freemasons page on Facebook. We're always updating that page with his articles when he publishes, as well as our own articles from the Midnight Freemason. Also, I want to mention, as always, our Android and Apple apps, which let you listen streaming. And for the money that you spend on those, you do get something. Each week I add to the bonus features the PDFs of the papers that we read, as well as a Masonic wallpaper. And it's just a little way to give back and keep the lights on. Another way you can support the show is to download the Stitcher Smart Radio app and use the promo code WENCECAMU with no spaces when you register. And if you do that, you get to listen to the show streaming. You also get customized content based on what you like to listen to. And by doing that, registering with WENCECAMU with no spaces, Stitcher sends us $1 to help keep the lights on. If you're not in the apps, we do have a donation button, which is all secure through PayPal. Again, all donations and app sales money go right back into the show. I don't pocket any of it. Lastly, don't forget about Onnit Labs for supplements, which are all natural and great fitness equipment. I personally use Alpha Brain every day. It's one of their supplements they make. It's all natural, and I've used it for the last 3 months. It keeps me focused, and it actually helped me with some daily anxiety problems I used to have to deal with. So it got me off the meds and onto something that's all natural. And if you want to use promo code WCY at checkout, you'll get 10% off your entire order as well. And they shoot a little back to the show in return. So it's a win-win. Links to Onnit Labs are also on our website. Make sure you click through so that they know who to support. So until next week, stay on the level. For Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson.